हरिः
The householders and persons who have deliberately broken the vow of celibacy cannot enter into the kingdom of deathlessness. The pious householders, or the fallen yogis, or the fallen transcendentalists can be promoted to the higher planets within the material world, the 1/4 energy of the Lord. But they will fail to enter into the kingdom of deathlessness. Right, so here is talking about the pious householders. Where impious, it doesn't even come into the equation here. Right? And here is meaning the, what do you call it? Fallen yogis or fallen transcendentalists. Right? So we're talking about persons who are following the rules and regulations. We're talking about those who are living a pious lifestyle.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Because the difficulty is that if we look at it technically, basically you can say on the universal level, there are 22, well, I guess you'd have to say 21, so that would make 42, 43, well, I guess you'd have to throw in now, 43, 44, 45 persons on the universal level who are householders, who are procreating children, who that's basically, they look at it as that's just what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the 21 Prajapatis, actually many of them have a lot of wives. Yeah, so that it's not just, it would be a few more. Yeah, so, but yeah, you're talking about in the whole universe, it's just, you know, like 100 people like that. Then there's, you know, saintly persons and that here. But the principle is that because of the nature of it, because of the absorbing quality of it, and here is because the idea of either one's breaking a vow, so that's not good, or the other is that one has the right. But then the distraction is that sense gratification, that whole involvement in the grihastha ashram, then is something that one identifies with, and that identity is going to keep one out of the spiritual world. Does that make sense? So it doesn't mean that on the principle of at the moment of death you remember Krishna, you'll go to Krishna. But the point is whether you'll remember Krishna.
Yes.
You know, that's the whole point. Because the problem is that in the dynamic aspect of grihastha, one has so many duties and all that, the tendency is to worry about that. Okay, if I'm going, what's the last minute things can be done before I go to make everything okay? But it's those last minute things that you worry about that you have to stick around to take care of. Does that make sense? That's why Krishna in the Gita says, thinking of me exclusively. It's not Krishna and the gopis and, you know, also, you know, like, you know, did I turn off the gas? You know, you can't do that. Yes.
So does it mean that Brahmachari, he's in the first place, he's not that worried? And those who enter grihastha ashram, they more worried.
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's just the position of being the brahmacharya. Prabhupada says that if one is practicing brahmachari, basically you're 50% back to Godhead. because you're not really involved that much. Because if you're not involved in family life, you're not really involved in that much in the material world. Okay, you know, the guy's got his, you know, favorite flashlight, or, you know, he really likes his sleeping bag or something like that, but it's not that big of an attachment. So it is an attachment, and it's a problem. You know, but it's not the same problem as the Grihastha have. So they're 50%. Yes.
So the next natural question is, the what about the ladies?
I thought you were going to say, the next natural question is, what's the percentage on Grihastha?
We don't want to hear
from you. That one is obvious.
The ladies are in there, basically, because when you discuss Varnashram, when you discuss the positions that people have, you discuss it according to the men's position. Because that will be the very exact mentality. The women are in their own category, because they work along the same lines, otherwise how will it be compatible? But at the same time, they're in their own category, because they can. It's either this or that. Because men have this, neutral, and that. But women only have this or that. Because it's all about relationship. Neutral means no relationship. So that's an unnatural position. How does the jiva take up that neutral relationship? He has to take up the purusha attitude. Then you can be neutral. Right. So, let's say even you have a lady who's has that impersonal tendency that she just wants to get out of the material world. It's so much pain. It's because you'll go to a situation that won't be pain. It's in other words, it's projected but not discussed about it'll be some kind of interaction. Mm-hmm. But they're just taking it for granted. But the men, when they think of no more pain, think of doing nothing. You know, how you say, then you become a, what do you call it, cosmic potato or something. Brahman potato. you know, like that. So it's they're in a different category. So it means wherever the attachment lies, that's where the connection will be. So that's why it's one's trying to connect everything. So all the things that are attachment are there, then the attachment is connected to Krishna. So then the natural is that doing things in the right way, because you get results. Right? Women want good results. They're practical that way. Men, you know, can go off to wars, get themselves killed, and not necessarily get much results out of it. Women generally avoid such, you know, folly. You know? You know? So they have this element too, that it must give results. Because the point is as we, if you go into the fundamental level, then you have the forms and activities that manifest the quality of Krishna. That's the feminine nature. And then to do that with variety. So then, therefore, that means there must be profit. But that profit is based off of doing the right thing. So women tend to be more religious than men, because they're worried that if I do bad, it'll get bad results. Now, if you break that, where they feel I do bad and I get no bad results, then you're not going to have more bad than a bad woman, like that. Because it's always extreme. For women, being extreme is standard, like that, you know. And then for the, the enthusiastic man who can, you know, step up to the plate, then, you know, he can take a shot at being involved. That's like the color. You know, they have that, the bucking bronco.
Yeah.
They either take a horse and tie a belt around the stomach, or even more fun, take a bull and tie the belt around the stomach, and then somebody tries to ride it, like that. So everybody else says, "Wow, that looks like fun." Yeah. So that's the
If you stay on for 10 seconds, you're doing good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so if you stay out for 30 years, you're doing good. Anyway, we stopped to some corner of the universe right there. Okay, so that's what goes here, is that we're talking about the pious. We're never talking about impious here. If we do, then it's directly there, because we say householder. Householder means someone who's pious. Because the household is not pious, then what benefit they'll get? Mm-hmm. Right? That's just automatic that it's not good. So, in other words, it's a risk that one is taking to engage those elements of one's life where there's attachment in the Lord's service and practice that. Right? So yes. It's a calculated risk. Yes. You know, and it's a recommended risk if one has desire. But the point is it's why it's dealt with in this way is because otherwise one will take it as standard. Look at the modern society. If you're a celibate, you're weird. You know? Yeah. Why would you do that? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's the same people that go, oh, you know, if girls get married early, this is so abusive, this is so terrible, this so this and that. But, you know, if at 12 they have a boyfriend, that's perfectly normal. I mean, how does this work? Yeah. You know, yeah, fruit. We can't take fruit. Fruit, that's nonsense, but we'll take fruit juice. Yeah. You know, it's just like weird. But whatever it is, they think it's normal. Because of the mode of ignorance, they think it's very logical. Yeah. Yes.
We're talking about the mentality here.
Mentality. Because it's not the position. Because as we've discussed before, the mentality of sannyas can be affected at any stage in life. That's a safe position. We're talking about here is the mentality of someone being a pious household and having that mentality, because then it's the right, you can do this. Which is true, but at the same time, because of that identity with it, the tendency will be to think that this is the natural position, when the natural position is fully absorbed in Krishna's service. Right? It's not about being a householder that's natural, it's about serving Krishna that's natural. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Then if one's fully serving Krishna, the householder position is not a problem. Right? Because when you look at here, it's that, you know, it's it. They cannot enter into the spiritual world. But now, in the spiritual world, basically, as we've discussed, probably most everybody there is grihasthas. Okay. So it's not the grihastha element that's the problem. It's the mentality of identifying with it. You know, and therefore being absorbed in trying to develop it and everything and thinking that this is the real position. Right? You understand? That's the real position. And then, you know, Krishna's there. It's got to be, no, Krishna's the position. And then whatever you're doing, that's connected to him. So it's all about the mentality.
How does this relate to that in Kali Yuga we don't get any reactions for subtle aparata, I mean, in the mind?
But you don't get the reaction. It doesn't mean you don't get the contamination. Yeah. Yeah. You know, like that. You know, it's kind of like... you know, sticking your hand in the mouth of the rabid dog. Okay, in Kali Yuga he doesn't bite you, but it's not that he doesn't slobber all over your hand. Okay, you understand? So that's
nice
the whole
example.
Okay, yeah. You remember that one? You understand? So that's what it means, that there's no reaction, but it's not that the effect of it means the mental contamination is there.
Yes.
But you don't get, in other ages you thought about something, you got the reaction.
The gross reaction.
The gross reaction, yes. So yeah.
So here it waits until our mentality becomes the gross.
Yeah, and then yes. Don't worry. They're patient. Like that. You know, in other words, why is Maya running the universe? Because she has all good qualities, so she has the patience to wait.
She can do it.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So, Maharaj, the reaction for the grihasa would be the attachment, if he thinks.
The attachment is just the entanglement. That's the problem.
Yes.
It's not what you're involved in. It's the mentality. But because this is hard to understand, Therefore, we start with the external. Don't do this, don't, you know, do this, don't do this. Does that make sense? So that's how it'll work. So it is taken that that's the real thing. Oh, being the grihastha is what's bad. No, no, it's the attachment that a grihastha has to being in a grihastha. That's the problem. It's not the situation, it's what you're doing with the situation.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Like you mentioned yesterday, what was the point of the class about the environment? And
yes, it means that the environment's supportive, but the environment, it's just like, because, you know, it caught at the end, but it's just like, let's say you have a car. Now, a car only runs by petrol, so you could say, well, the car, petrol's just as important as the car, so if I give you a, you know, a 5-liter, you know, can of petrol, then you're good, you know? Brum, brum. Not going. Oh, maybe the cap's too tight. You know? You're not holding the handle right. You know. So, you know. So that's the thing, is that this understanding is that, because the contemporary concept is all or nothing. So it's either it's useful and that's what it is, or it's we don't even count it. But no, there's primary and secondary, and this just doesn't compute with the modern brain.
So I'm primary.
Yeah.
Everything else is secondary.
Yeah, so. And I'm into it, so it must be primary.
Yeah. But sometimes I see the attempt to try to solve this conflict is to put it, or everything connected to the grihastha is bad. So that is the
yeah, it's either everything connected is bad, or what's the problem? You know, why do you bring this up? We've heard that. You know, yeah, your wife's also heard I love you, so, you know, why do you keep saying it? You know, you had food yesterday, you know, why are you doing it again today? You know?
Why do you keep
getting
breathing?
Old? Yeah, breathing, I mean, that's not, that's getting real old, you know. You know, blinking the eyelids,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so tired of it.
So the point is because it's the mentality we're trying to get at. Because household is a mentality, not a position. Right? It also includes the position, of course. So you can have an advanced personality who's in the position of a grihastha, but functioning like we see the pandavas like this. Yeah. So promoted to the higher planets within the material world. Right? So higher means within the material world. So that's what Krishna says. Then one will go to the heavenly planets and everything. Then after that, one will come back, born in religious, pious families like that. Because you were pious in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know,
yes.
You know that, yeah. Okay. Abrihad vratas are those who have broken the vow of celibacy. Oh, abrihad. Brihad vratas. Celibacy, abrihad vratas, okay. The vanaprastas, or those retired from family life, and the sannyasis, or the renounced persons, cannot break the vow of celibacy if they want success in the process. The brahmacharis, vanaprastas, and sannyasis do not intend to take rebirth, apraja, nor are they meant for secretly indulging in sex life. Such a fall down by the spiritualist may be compensated by another chance for human life in good families of learned brahmanas, or of rich merchants, or for another term of elevation. But the best thing, so that's why you many times find this here, is learned brahmins naturally expect them to be, but also here it says rich merchants.
Yeah.
So it's just the natural that they'll be spiritually inclined, just because that's where they're coming from, that circle.
This is depending on the mentality that they will
To some degree, yeah, probably. You know, where they got in the position from. Yeah, how they got in the position. But basically the thing. So that's why you see a lot of times those who may be from these business families, they seem to be just so much inclined to spiritual life. They don't really appear to be so much like business persons. That's just because they're coming from that mind. You know, it's not just that they have good karma from, you know, with money, so now they're born in a moneyed family. This is coming from bhakti.
Yeah.
Right? That makes sense. Yeah. But best thing is to attain the highest perfection of deathlessness as soon as the human form of life is attained. Otherwise, the whole policy of human life will prove to be a total failure. So right from the beginning. Lord Chaitanya was very strict in advising his followers in this matter of celibacy. One of his personal attendants, Chota Haridas, was severely punished by Lord Chaitanya because of his failure to observe the vow of celibacy. For a transcendentalist, therefore, who at all wants to be promoted to the kingdom beyond material miseries, it is worse than suicide to deliberately indulge in sex life, especially in the renounced order of life. Sex life in the renounced order of life is the most perverted form of religious life, and such a misguided person can only be saved if, by chance, he meets a pure devotee. And so, again, it's only by devotional service. That's the only way, and the process will work. So, even in the most difficult position, it's by association. And if you're in a good position, it's still, one's only going to move forward by association. And so that association is your main thing.
Why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so harsh to Chota Haridas?
Otherwise, if you don't set a standard, then everybody will just say, oh, see, it wasn't so bad.
Actually, he didn't do anything physical.
No, but the point is that where do you draw the limit? You know what I'm saying? There's this position called rationality, you know, where you rationalize. Does that make sense? So you always take it, whatever it is, it's not so bad. And so then wherever it is, that's not so bad. So then next to that's not so bad, next to that's not so bad, next to that's not so bad. Yes, no?
Yeah,
and then you have the sahajis.
They're right next to those guys.
Yeah.
Sound disappointed.
I think Gaur Govinda Maharaj, when he asked Srila Prabhupada about sannyas, so Prabhupada was very, they had only one conversation before he got it. And then Srila Prabhupada was very, very strict with him, and he said, even in your dreams, you're not going to dream about ladies. And then he said, that's it. And then he gave him sannyas then, a little later.
Yeah, because if it's not the dreams, means it's not the day, in the waking
yes,
state.
Yes. Because you're not thinking about it.
Yeah, that's good. That's the standard. He seemed to have done well. Lord Brahma continues, by his energies, okay, so this is just how to get in the spiritual world. You have to be detached from sex life. Because sex life is the, how you say, it's the basis of everything else. All other attachments come from that. Right? Because from that, then everything expands. Lord Brahma continues, by his energies, the Lord masters both nescience and true knowledge and controls both matter and devotional service. Footnote 35. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, verse 21 describes the Purusha Shukta line, Tato, Vishvan Vyakramata, Sashana Nashane Api. The jiva traverses the two paths of enjoyment and liberation. Okay, so that both nescience and true knowledge. So the path of enjoyment is nescience, and the path of true knowledge is the liberation. Srila Prabhupada explains that even the desire for liberation is in the category of nescience. Oh, okay, so that's even here. True knowledge then means devotional service. Oh, okay, because he's doing both matter and devotional service. So nescience means matter, karma, and jnana, and true knowledge means devotional service. The material body is the symbol of the gross and subtle form of forgetfulness. Therefore, the whole atmosphere of the material world is called avidya, or nescience. Whereas the whole atmosphere of the spiritual world is called vidya, or full of knowledge. There are different stages of avidya, and they are called dharma, artha, and moksha. The idea of moksha, liberation, held by the monist in the matter of oneness of the living entity and the Lord by ultimate merging in one, is also the last stage of materialism or forgetfulness. Because you're forgetting your relationship with the Lord. Because your relationship is not merging into the Lord, because he's still the Lord and you're still a jiva who's merged in the Lord. So there's still a difference, yes.
In this sense, dharma is called the vidya because we identify with the body and then we follow dharma?
Yes. Yes, well, because most people, why do they follow dharmas? Because they'll get some result. Like, you know, the question that came up the other day is, what was it, you know, we've done so much in Krishna consciousness for so many years, so what do we get from it? So what does that mean? It was dharma, and then the idea, of course, from dharma and kamartha. So if from dharma comes moksha, many are a little surprised. They kind of expect the other way. You know, Krishna is being very kind and taking it towards moksha, bhakti, and they're thinking, no, it's supposed to go to heart.
Wait, wait,
I'm heading in the wrong direction here. Yes.
Can we say if we're performing dharma to get artha, then the mentality is artha from the beginning?
You do have that, but at the same time as you know that it's only through art dharma you'll get it. So you're situated in dharma, though the mentality is that. Because the better is you're performing dharma's naishkarmi, right? Because it's just like, let's say, we present the position of everyone working together, right? Selflessly in society. So the position is we'll work together in artha, you know, and be selfless,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be naishkarmi, it would be, you know, nice results.
Nice,
you
know, result,
yeah. So the position is that that's not actually a position, because then how do you get that result? That's what's not clear.
Yes.
That's why people do all kinds of things.
Yes.
Because we're supposed to work together. Mm-hmm. So if everybody cheats and everybody therefore gets the benefit, it's all right. Like a group of thieves get together, they steal. They'll consider this proper, you know, cooperating, everything, doing all, it's ethical,
yes.
Right? But if after stealing one of them tries to take everything, then that's unethical.
Yes.
But the Vedic system is how you're getting it. So they're working together, that's the position, so it has to be that it's defined by Shastra, your duties. That's where the naishkarmya. Then that result is because you've done the duties. Because the other is that unless there's a sense of attachment to the result, you won't work in artha.
Yes.
So then it's a very weak position to be nice karmya and at the same time attach to the results. They don't quite go together. There's kind of a little opposing in their how you say, definition.
Yes.
So only when there's dharma, then you can say it's nice karmya.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So they're always bringing in these higher ideals at a lower level, right? Pranamoya, if it's done with that selfless, it's called spiritual, you know, like this. But they're missing that spiritual means the platform of the soul, and then you are performing your duties. So they don't really catch these. It's always unclear. Yes,
Maharaj, this definition of vidya is coming from a Upanishadic view.
Yes, because if it's no, this is coming from devotional. Because here, it's taking the step. The Upanishads would be, dharma, artha, kama would be avidya. Moksha would be vidya.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bhagavatam platform is dharma, artha, kama, moksha is avidya.
Mm-hmm.
And bhakti is vidya. Right? So this is like 11th canto. So it's giving that kind of view. Does that make sense? And you notice in here, Prabhupada doesn't even, sense gratification doesn't even, you know, get a mention. Because, you know, because the engagement of the senses is dependent upon these higher principles. It has to be controlled by these higher principles. Mm-hmm. Knowledge of the qualitative oneness of the self and super-self is partial knowledge, and ignorance also, because there's no knowledge of qualitative differences explained above. So you have partial knowledge because you know the oneness aspect, but you don't know the rest of it, which is the difference aspect. So when you know both, then you actually know. So that's real knowledge. Before that, you call it knowledge within, not knowledge. You know, it's just like a prisoner's. Then there's, you can call it good prisoners and bad prisoners. They're all criminals. Just one is able to partially understand the purpose of the institution, but he doesn't fully understand.
Okay.
The individual self can never be equal to the Lord in cognizance. Otherwise, he could not be placed in the state of forgetfulness, because God's not forgetful. So, you know, this is the what false ego. If I'm not, then God can't be either.
Of course.
So if he has a form, I have a form, I'm forgetful. He has a form, he'll be forgetful.
Yes.
Rather than he's not forgetful. So because there's a stage of forgetfulness of the individual selves or the living entities, there's always a gulf of difference between the Lord and the living entity, as between the part and the whole. Footnote 36. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 4.5. The personality of Godhead said, "Many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy." So that means he's full cognizance. He's aware of everything. Right? So that's just his existence. So then that position where someone's interacting with him, that's of interest. You know? Because if you're aware of everything at all times, then what's going to be of interest? You know everything.
Yes.
Every last bit of gossip that there's happening on the planet, you know.
Oh my God.
You know? At all times, and you never forget it.
Yeah.
You know? You know, the guy says, "Yeah, you know, I did this," and says, "Yeah, that's right." You know, the last seven verses, he's always done that. You know, so, you know, one of the other guys that came up, "What are you talking about?"
He was talking about yesterday.
Yeah. You know, so it's not of interest. In other words, the position of being God is not that interesting, because it's just a state of existence. So what's interesting is interaction based on affection. Because otherwise, if you're God and it's just based on godness, then who compares? There's only one of you.
Yes.
Mm. You know what I'm saying? It's just yourself. Then there's your energy. So it's interacting with the energy based on affection that becomes interesting. That's it. The part is never equal to the whole, so the conception of 100% equality of the living being with the Lord is also nescience. Just because they use that word. So the idea of 100% equality. So equality is, it's one of the things we're always working for. But we're thinking it's coming from karma, but it's actually coming from beyond. That everything is equal, because it's obvious everything is different. How can anything be equal? Everything is unique. Right?
Yes.
So then to say everything's equal, then that's impersonalism.
Yes, it is. But there's a process.
Yeah. From that personality of Godhead, all the universal globes and the universal form with all material elements, qualities, and senses are generated. Yet he is aloof from such material manifestations, like the sun, which is separate from its rays and heat. 22. Verses 23 to 33. Performing sacrifice by using the creation in the Lord's service. So now we get into, we've made in the position of it, you know, and about the actual goal and everything. Now we're talking about how to connect these. In this section, Brahma recounts his birth from the lotus flower that grew from the navel of Vishnu. He tells how at that time he made sacrifice by using only the limbs of the subtle Virat, since there was nothing else to be offered. After Brahma, 9 leading personalities among the sages and demigods performed this yajna. Sacrifices after which were performed by the manus, human beings, and daitas, etc. In order to maintain the cosmic manifestation for all such different grades of beings, the Lord accepted the modes of nature. But personally, he has no affinity for any material quality. Okay. Cool. The Brahma then describes his own birth from the lotus flower that grew from the navel of my Lord Mahavishnu. At that time, he wished to perform a sacrifice, but he had no ingredients other than the bodily limbs of the great personality of Godhead. Text 23. Brahma here speaks of the Urat root prior to the Visarga, the secondary creation, entrusted to Brahma by the Lord. Brahma's duty is to create. The time for that duty begins in the early hours of his every morning, because during every night of Brahma, the cosmos below his region of Satyaloka dissolves and is absorbed into the stem of this lotus seed that grew from the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Before he can create, Brahma has to visualize by meditation the subtle forms of the living entities. But where are they? They are arrayed within the subtle Virat Rupa that Lord Vishnu sustains through the night within his heart. Simply stated, during Brahma's day, after he has completed the Visarga, the universe is manifest as matter in two phases, stula, physical, and linga, astral. But that remains through Brahma's night is the Virat Rupa as represented in the subtlest of subtle material nature. Whereas the jivatmas are suspended in sushupti, dreamless sleep or coma. In this state, beyond even the workings of the mind, thinking, feeling, willing, the karmic proclivities of the jivas remain, but not as explicit bodies and minds as we know them. The karmic proclivities are implicit or encoded within karana dehas, or causal bodies. Rooted in the Lord's sat manifestation, the significance of which was noted in the previous chapter. Karna dehas are the forms of the jivas as they are conserved inside the body of Karana Dakshaya Vishnu, whose original aspect is Lord Shakrashan, known as Jiva. 37. So the Karna Sharir is that desire to enjoy, to be the controller and enjoyer, because that's the cause of them, the specifics of then being trying to enjoy through the modes of nature, where one has the gross and subtle body. But the principle behind that, that's why these jnanis and yogis who merge into the Brahman, they never give up the karana sharir. That's why they never get into the spiritual world. Right? Because we have the gross body, we have the subtle body, but what's the cause of that? That's the karana sharir. Yes. That concept of being the controller and enjoyer.
So that's the body that the jiva accepts when it's merging to the body.
Well, that's the you could say the body that's left. Okay. It's not necessarily that it has a specific form, but that's the subtle aspect that will generate the gross and subtle body. Right? Because Prabhupada said, like you're saying about the doctor, who's the doctor? Right? On one sense, you can say it's the body. Because it's the body that's doing, you have the mentality that you can do, but it's the soul who identifies with it. That identification with it, that's the karana sharir. Because that's what causes these. Because you identify in that way, therefore you get the particular kind of senses that therefore have that particular body. 37. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands himself into four other eternal transcendental forms: Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. From Vasudeva, who is the primary expansion, comes Sankarsana, Prajumna, and Aniruddha in that order. Rupa Goswami says that these four expansions of Narayana are present in the spiritual sky, where they are famous as Mahavasta. Among them, Vasudeva is worshipped within the heart by meditation because he is the predominating deity of the heart, as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 4.3.23. Sankarsana, the second expansion, is Vasudeva's personal expansion for pastimes. And since he is the reservoir of all living entities, he is sometimes called Jiva. Right? He's the reservoir of all the living entities. You know, so this is where... Now this is the point where those who really have nothing to do start getting the jiggity. The beauty of Sankarsana is greater than that of innumerable full moons radiating light beams. He is worshipable as the principle of ego, because you have to have identity. So living entities, then they have identity. He has invested Anantadeva with the potencies of sustenance.
For the dissolution of the creation, he also exhibits himself as the Supersoul in Rudra. In Adharma, the personality of religion, irreligion. In Sarpa, snakes. In Antaka, Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, and in the demons. Because right, that's that potency. You know, so we see is that it's from Sankarsana that that one is getting this principle of the creation and destruction. You know, mm-hmm. This whole, sustenance and destruction. So as a non, because you have to accommodate, you have to be able to, things have to be able to go together, have to be able to be taken apart. Right, so going together, that will mean they're sustained. Taking them apart means they're destroyed. Right? Does that make sense? Right, so you have that element of creation there, but it's a matter of your potency is what holds things together, your potency is what accommodates them, so in that state.
I have a doubt about Vidura and
Vidura and Yudhishthira.
Because there's some connection to Dhammaraj.
Yudhishthira is Yamaraj's son. Right? So therefore, because he's his son, he is also known as Dhammaraj. You know, just like Arjuna is son of Indra. So he has that kind of potency.
The Buddha is himself with the curse.
Yes, is Yamaraj himself. So then...
Sotmaster, Yamaraj, Dhammaraj, one's more of a manikul aspect, one's more of a Kshatriya aspect.
Yeah, I mean, Vidura is, he's coming just to take part, because he doesn't, Vidura, as Vidura, he doesn't have to administrate, he just, you know, lives and discusses Dharma. But as Yamaraj, then he has to administrate that whole scene, right? So, you know, there's a lot going on.
Sankarsana being the principle of sustenance and destruction, what's the role of the energy then?
Sustaining and destroying.
Means the principle
means
does the work?
Yeah. That's what it always does. That means that's the point is energy means that the energy is what gets it done. He's doing it, but he does it through his energies. So you understand? So this is where you get the element of that combination of serving and control. But you'll notice that most, when people look at this, they look at, you know, the submissive wife, they only look at that side. They don't understand it's to that degree of submission, is that to that degree of control. They think it's two separate things. So that's illusion. You know, they say it's not supposed to be like that. No, that's the way it works. Anyway, you don't get opposites go together. You know. So the man is in the neutral state, and the feminine has these, as you mentioned, the extremes are what creates the variety. The extremes is what creates the interest. Because if I have two extremes, okay, how much variety do I have in between?
A lot.
Yeah, you understand? So if I have 0 and I have 100, that means I have, you know, 90, you know, I mean, including those, I have basically 101 options. You know, and then there's, you know, in between. You know, so that's the whole thing. That's where there'll be variety. Because you have the dynamic of these seeming opposing things. So on one sense, the energy is, whatever it is you're in contact with, you're in contact with the energy. But the point is the energy won't exist without the masculine. So without Krishna, you won't see all this. It's his energy, so it is him. But at the same time, it is his energy. You know what I'm saying? So that's the...
So, Maharaj, in the Veda, it says that Yami wants to marry this Yama.
Yami wants to marry Yama.
Yeah.
And you want to bring that up now.
It just feels strange, right? I mean, Yami is Yamuna, so how can she want to marry Yama?
Her element is she is, because Yamuna means, that, what is her position? What is it, Yamuna?
Yamuna is Krishna's pure devotee.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, what's the position of her as a river? She's just another river?
Yes.
Right, she's a Viraja. She's, you know, I mean, so she's basically, you can say, the transcendental. And Yamaraj, and what's his position? How religious is Yamaraj?
It's the personified.
So you don't get much better than that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then her being in her position, so she's just looking at it, then what a better match. You're not going to get any more in the position of basically religious than herself. Or him as in the masculine position. So therefore, she brings that up, that we would be a proper match. Right? And then he points out as no, because in the system, both the brothers and sisters don't get married. Right? And so then, okay. Yeah. Otherwise, how do you know that? How would you know it's not good unless this conversation came up? So it means the conversation has to come up somewhere. So it came out due to respect and proper matching, not anything else. Okay? So okay. Prajumna, the third manifestation, appears from Shankarshan. Those who are especially intelligent worship this Prajumna expansion of Shankarshan as the principle of intelligence. Because right? Intelligence means you have the element of overall sambandhi, you're dealing with the field. So knowledge is there. And now this is a matter of the mechanics of how you're dealing with the intelligence of self. Right, we have Shankarshan is jnana, but here's actually the intelligence that you're dealing with, how you're dealing with jnana. The goddess of fortune always chants the glories of Prajumna in the place known as Ilavritavarsha, and she always serves him with great devotion. His complexion appears sometimes golden and sometimes bluish, like new monsoon clouds in the sky. He is the origin of the creation of the material world. So here's the creating factor. Because it means it's based on Sankarshan. Because you have to have a field. But then with that, now you create. Yes.
Is that because of the element of attraction?
Yes, because attraction, you have to pull things together. Like that. Otherwise, but you see here is maintenance. So you're accommodating everything. Right? And so if you don't accommodate it, it kind of doesn't. Yeah. Okay, and he has invested his creative principle in Cupid. It is by his direction only that all the men and demigods and other living entities function with energy for regeneration. Right. Yeah, so that everything's expanding, everything is doing, that's come from Jhumna. Right? Does that make sense? So that would mean that principle, that's the principle that you're talking about here, is that regeneration, developing and all that, that's the element that the previous was talking about. If one's absorbed in this on the material platform, then one will not go to the spiritual world. Right? You have to be dealing with Prajumna on the transcendental platform. Right? Does that make sense? Like Sankarshan is knowledge, so that is a good position because it's neutral. But now with Prajumna, now you're involved in that element of rasa, because if there's generation, there's what you're going to do with it. You know, and then there's what the result you'll get from it. Well, the knowledge of it is neutral.
Prajumna is the origin of Paramatma?
Expanding from him comes Paramatma, because he's Garbhodaksha Vishnu. Right? Means the Sankarshan is Mahavishnu.
Yeah.
Aniruddha, the fourth of the quadruple expansions, is worshipped by great sages and psychologists as the principle of the mind. His complexion is similar to the bluish hue of a blue cloud. He engages in the maintenance of the cosmic manifestation and is the supersoul of Dharma, the deity of religiosity, because he maintains religious principles. Right? And then religious principles means the mode of goodness and the mind go very well together. Okay, here's the supersoul of Dharma, the deity of religiosity. The Manus, the progenitors of mankind, and the Devatas, demigods. So here we see the deity of religiosity, but also... he was irreligious. Yamaraj, Antaka, Yamaraj. So that would be the Lord of Death, that aspect of it, that's Sankarshan. But then his element of religiosity, then that's Aniruddha. The Moksha Dharma, Vedic scripture, indicates that Prajumna is the deity of the total mind, whereas Aniruddha is the deity of the total ego. The previous statements regarding the quadruple forms are confirmed in the Pancharatra Tantras in all respects. So the Pancharatras support this view that was presented. But he's mentioning the Moksha Dharma that you can look at it the other way. But he's saying Pancharatra, how it was described, is how it's accepted. So that's basically that's how we would view it. But because the other aspect can work, I say, the total mind, because you can take it as that the element of the senses, that would, because the mind is the control of the senses, therefore you have the senses and how all that works, naturally the mind is there, and then what you get as results is how you identify yourself, right? So you can put it that way, but the point is if you look at it, you take it the next step, once you get something, then it moves back to Prajumna. That's where identity is. Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So then the point is you have to make a choice.
There's no better sambandha.
So Prajumna is within sambandha.
Okay, okay.
It's just it moves back to that part. Because you're talking about action. Okay. Action is Prajumna, Vasudeva, and Aniruddha. Sankarshan is the field, the situation. Right? The knowledge of that situation. So it'll move back to that part. You know, technically it's part of the field, but now you're inspired. You worked for something, you got it, you know, it was a goal, now you have it, and so now you're inspired to use it in so many ways. Does that make sense? So like someone talks about, well, you know, the person has something, but he's not really using it. Now they say, oh, if I had that, I'd do this, I'd do that, I'd do so many things. So they're looking at it from that element of Prajumna.
So in that sense, Prajumna would be the total of the mind.
That means from the other, when you're looking at it just its position, you can. But because everything shifts, the point is you have a desire, but it has to move to a need. So it's actually when there's need, then the mind takes full control of that. Otherwise, before that, you're dealing with intelligence. I could do this, I could do that, so there's some inspiration. But it's then when the focus is made and this is the decision, then that's Aniruddha. So that's why the Pancharatra puts it the way we discuss it. That's we're discussing the Pancharatra view. You can do it the other way, but then you're pulling it in a little bit. Because they don't look at rasa so much. Right? But the Pancharatra is then very supportive of what we do. That's why we use it as a system. You know, so for us, the Pancharatra is the system of worship as opposed to Tantra or Vaikanas or these other systems. Does that make sense? Because it perfectly matches with the Bhagavat very nicely. Yes.
So can we say that Prajumna is Sambandha, Vasudeva Bhagavad and Aniruddha is Prayojana?
Prajumna is Sambandha.
Together with Sankarshana?
Yes.
Vasudeva is Abhideya.
Abhideya. Prayojana. Right, and that's the element of prior to controlled by goodness. That's where the mind comes from there. Because intelligence is passion, because it's about doing something, analyzing that.
mind is accepting and rejecting, it's also doing something.
That, but it's accepting and rejecting based on, you know, the, what is there. It's like, okay, it's like this. Okay. I'm trying to think how to express this. Okay. The lady is interested in something. Something should happen, something special, unique, something different. So then the man is there making different dramatic presentations of what they could do. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, we could go here, we could do it there, we could do this, we could do, you know what I'm saying? Like that. And what's the wife doing? Right. Yeah, that's there. Until you really get something good. And then you say, maybe. And then let him work on that for a while. Right? So, does that make sense? So, therefore, the mind is accepting and rejecting. Right? So the masculine principle has to get out there and do something. Yes.
So, is character connected to the mind? Is it connected to the intelligence?
It's the state of your mind is basically, you could say, your character. But now you can improve that through intelligence.
Improve.
Yes. So that's why, for us, it doesn't matter what stage one takes up the process. You know, earlier is always recommended, but it doesn't matter because through intelligence, one therefore can move forward. Right? By intelligence, you say, this is right, and then the mind accepts that, so now that becomes the standard of the mind to accept and reject on. Because ultimately, intelligence, the false ego, these functions of, are subsections of the mind on one level. Because the subtle body, you can say, it's the mind. If we mention intelligence, false ego, mind like that, then we're talking about these three aspects. But you can just say the one, just like we say Mahavishnu, that it means creation, maintenance, and destruction. We don't have to say them. So in the same way, the mind means accepting and rejecting, analyzing, and identity. Right? Yeah, but what is the mind going to, what is the intelligence going to analyze? What the mind has accepted. Right? And then what's the decision of the mind going to make? Is it's going to accept and reject based on the ego. So they're just different factors of the mind, actually. Though they're different elements, but the whole thing works together as one entity. You know, like you have the crushed ice, you have the sugar, and you have the yogurt. You know, it functions as one lassi, right? But it includes these three ingredients. Does that make sense?
We say that it's the nature of the man to get out there and do things, but we also see that men can become very apathetic, whereas...
That's the Sankishan part.
And ladies, they remain active also.
There's no question about it. Yeah.
And in your example,
if the lady's not active, there's something wrong.
Yes.
She's tired.
Yeah. I mean, that's another thing that we're talking about. Then she just goes to sleep. But if she's awake and inactive, there's something wrong. Because the point is it's about energy means relationship and interacting.
Yes.
Sankarshan means just existing.
So the man can be active on his own, the lady will be active with someone or...
No, the man, if he's active, it's in relationship to others. That's the problem. He thinks he's active on his own. Therefore, grumpiness.
Yes.
Right? He is active always with. He can be inactive on his own. Or he has to be active with others.
So what when he's out in the garage?
It's him and his car. Uh-huh. Right, you know, him and his, you know, piece of wood. And his, that furniture, you know. In other words, he's with that. Yeah. You know. You know, what is it, the cliche? A man and his machine, yes. Right?
Yeah. Men and motors.
Yeah, so like that. So there's a relationship there, just that the motor doesn't complain.
Just sometimes.
You
know,
you call that a wrench. Yeah, you don't get that.
No.
Therefore, a man and his machine. There's an attractiveness of the garage.
Yes. I want to just clarify, Prayojana being the root is the experience you gain.
Yeah, it's the result. It's the reason of doing something that you're choosing based on, you know, that it's the need, you could say need. So there's the need, so then the need naturally generates an experience. Yes.
According to Bhagavad-gita, the intelligence is above the mind.
And it's above the mind, but it's controlled by the mind.
But then there's this, these verses where, you know, once the intelligence is fixed, one becomes detached, and one becomes aloof.
Yes, but how does that happen? The mind has to agree. The guy is the emperor of the world. Why? Technically.
The other kings agree?
No.
No.
The other kings agree.
No. He already said that.
No.
His wife agreed. Then he can go for it. Because in rasa, it's like this. What is the interest? The interest is in these opposites. You know what I'm saying? Is that like, combining opposites is what is interesting. That's where you get the taste. Does that make sense? Let's say like a chutney. It stands out amongst preparations because of all the contradictory elements of it. Right? So if you look at it, then there's always going to be that kind of a aspect. Therefore, every culture, in their cuisine, has all these kind of chutneys that you can put on stuff. Because that's what gives it interest. I mean, even, I think the American term for these things, they call it relish. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then and there, because the opposites now, you know, what's the fun? The grandson is, you know, on his hands and knees and the grandfather's riding on his back, or, you know, the grandfather's on his hands and knees and the grandson's riding on his back. Which of the two is going to be more fun?
There's only one way to go there.
That depends if you say, you know, this, the grandson's baby Huey, then you know. Then. No? Is that make sense? I was just talking to somebody yesterday, one of the boys was talking somehow or another about this family. The family came up. So the boy's 16, he has a niece who's 15, and she's bigger than him. So that's interesting. The whole family's devotees, right? So, therefore, the independent is appearing to be dependent, and the dependent is appearing to be independent. That's where the taste is. So we're thinking that, no, household life's going to be great, because the man is independent, does whatever he likes, whatever he feels like, you know. And the woman just does what he tells her to do. This is you know, every conversation on every pub of the world, right? But the reality is the opposite, because that's how rasa works. You know what I'm saying?
With Krishna it works.
That's because he perfectly follows these principles of being perfectly, you know, submissive. Henpecked is the word. Mm-hmm. He's controlled by, it means what is Gopi Janavallava? I mean, he's controlled by the gopis. But the same time as he has that power, so you know he's independent. See, this is the fun, is the man who is independent acts as if he's not. And the women can tell that. They can tell who's independent, who is being submissive because they have to be, and who's being submissive because they want to be. If they have to be, women just really just don't care. They treat them really badly. I mean, really badly. And those who are because they want to be, they respect them. It's a whole science, because you have to put these dynamics together. That's where the taste is. Otherwise, what's the fun of the unlimited is, you know, interacting with the most limited. Right? You know, of all entities, we're the smallest. Even Maya is bigger than us. Right? You know, just take one element, just like we're talking about, just earth or water, fire. How much is there? The volume of it is huge. We're 1/10,000th of the hair. I mean, you don't get smaller than us, you know, as far as the energies go. So Krishna, the unlimited, likes to interact with us. You don't get more of a dynamic than that. So it's all about this, the energy interacting with the energetic. They're opposite. Compatible, but opposite. So that's the whole point of a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, is then one can appreciate rasa. That's the whole thing. The other is that rasa is there, but it's less. Without a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, basically you don't really get past these other rasa. You can't get into the conjugal rasa on the platform of Parakya with separation. Unless you have a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, because the refinement, the opposing elements that you're dealing with. You know, Krishna comes into the room and Radharani's in ecstasy that he's come, and she says, "What are you doing here? Get out of here. You know, this is my room. Why are you here?" You're only going to get that when these points are understood. Sounds like that.
So we were talking about the proper relationship or proper rasa.
Yes.
So where's this rasa-bas element coming from?
Rasa-bas means where you're mixing rasas that don't go together. So that's the whole point, is it's still a science. Because if you're going to put together contradictory qualities, you have to do it in the right way.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, let's say, mixing a perfume or that. There may be 100 ingredients, but you get it out of proportion and it's, you know, bad. Or doesn't. You get it in the right proportion, it's classic. Mm. You know, so that's what the whole science is what actually mixes with what. So you know what goes together.
Then it becomes very difficult, because opposites, we think it's not that good together, but still it is.
They are, but you have to know how to put them together.
In what proportion?
In what proportion or what... The point is you're taking the masculine and feminine, okay? They're opposites. You're putting them together. And so even though the masculine is independent, the feminine is dependent, when you put them together, it appears that the feminine is independent and the masculine is dependent. Yeah. So then that's how it works. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, because the masculine element is that of independence, therefore, when the couple is in public, the wife wants to show off compatibly the independent aspect. Because then the quality of her relationship is then enhanced. You understand? So in public, she doesn't want him to look like he's
dependent.
Right? Because then others will criticize that she has a weak husband. Therefore, she has a weak husband. Therefore, she is in a weak position. Right? Because, you know, does that make sense? You know, because it's like, you know, you got a Fiat or you got a Ferrari. I mean, there's a difference in what you can do. So people will criticize based on that. That makes sense. Right. So therefore it has to appear. That's why the woman doesn't want in public him to do things in such a way that it makes him look too dependent. Unless she's really, really upset with him and she wants to force the issue, or she's about ready to get rid of him. And so it's just that she's around, then he's useful, but, you know, I mean, kind of engaged, but as soon as something better comes along, he'll be dropped. You know what I'm saying? So we're talking about a whole different world than what we're used to, you know. Therefore, you see the difference in who writes the screenplay. You know, that's the thing. At the end, you see, was it a male or female? You know, because the male ones, you know, he says something, she gets upset, and he says, oh, don't do be like that, and then she goes, oh, okay. Yeah. The female writes the screenplay, it doesn't look like
that. I had an interesting experience on my way back from Vrindavan. It's an early train, 5:45 in the morning, and the crews gave me and the rickshaw driver, Ron, information about the platform that the train was going to arrive on. And I'm carrying books. I'm carrying too much stuff. So the rickshaw walker gets me to platform 2 after we go to platform 4, and all these different instructions that different people had about where the train's going to come. And then, 10 minutes or 5 minutes before the train is supposed to pull in and leave, and there's an announcement, and these two college students hear the announcement, and the train's on platform 8. And I'm on platform 2. So 5 flights of stairs overhead, I have to go to platform 8. And I can't do it because I got all these books. Suddenly, I felt like a little girl. You know, I can't even make a train. I can't even go to a train. Right? So, I mean, Krishna was keeping me on the edge of my seat. I was thinking, he must get some enjoyment out of that sometimes. But anyway, that's the way I felt. And these college students, without me asking, grabbed the books, and we made the train. But, you know, I got a wake-up call, you know, this is, you know, my position.
Yeah, because the point is it's, that is the position, because we're not acting in a position outside of that based on affection. You know. What I'm talking about is the natural position when everything is in its proper place that will manifest in these ways. This is the position that the, you know, within this world the women are trying to get it to. In the spiritual world they operate at that level because that's what brings pleasure to Krishna.
But in this world we are dependent on the protection
of the Lord,
and
yes. Yes, but
the
then
Lord.
The point is then, and then what happened? Did the college students comment that you're so stupid and why you're on the wrong platform?
No.
Did they complain that you're so weak, or why did you bring so much stuff, you're so attached? No. Those are the things the husband would have said to the wife. And then they think, no, but it's the Shastra says, they're dependent, they're dependent how? Dependent nice. So that's the problem, is that you're not nice, they're not nice. So if you're not nice when you're in the superior position, they won't be nice when they're in the superior position. So if one takes it, I'm the husband, so I do what I want, I say what I want, and if I can't, then that's not real man. Then when they're being real woman, then realize how. So people only get exactly what they put in. You put a penny in the machine, you get a penny's worth of goods. You put a quarter in, you get a quarter's worth of goods. So that's the whole point.
Isn't it that the woman has a tendency to amplify what you put in?
But it's only amplification and potential of what you can do with it.
Okay.
Because then you, if it's done one, then you push it a touch farther, mm-hmm. then you have to respond farther than that, yeah. then it can go farther. Yeah. That's all. It's just because you have to create the balance. Whatever, if it's at one stage you create the balance with that, it's been pushed farther, you push it farther. You have to respond with the equal.
So the man has the tendency.
And you understand what the equivalent is? Yeah. It's the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. So the man has the tendency to respond in the same, not take it further? Or
that, no, he has a tendency to respond in the same instead of the opposite. She's angry, he gets angry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's angry, he becomes humble. Then she stops being angry. This means you put out, means you can use the system of fire with fire, but what does that mean? If I'm gonna put out fire with fire, what do I have to do? What is the fire burning on?
Fuel.
So that means I have to have other fuel that I have to burn it on.
Mm.
So you lose both of fuel. If you have fuel burning and I put water, you don't use any extra.
Mm.
You know? And fire with fire doesn't always work. Because fire can jump over the place where the fire was. So whatever position you take, the fire can get greater than that it catches what's beyond on fire. So it means you have to know what you're doing. So the direct one is water. You only use fire if water doesn't work. And then you have to know how to apply it. It's not that fire comes and you immediately go to that. The first thing is always water. You know, or let it burn itself out. You know, something. You know, but
go to the garage.
Yeah, but its point is it's still, it's in connection with that. In other words, this dynamic is working because all these seeming opposite elements are all working together. That's the point of Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. That's why we take it to such fineness. Right? One is so we can distinguish between material and spiritual. But the other, so then we'll use that same technique in distinguishing within the spiritual world the fineness for getting these fine elements of, because we're dealing with Swarup Shakti, the total Shakti. That means every subtlety that's there in Krishna is there in her. Right? Lakshmi is she's manifesting a portion of that. It's still unlimited, but it's still unlimited in a particular area. So it doesn't have all those elements, at least not that we're part of. You don't hear of in Vaikuntha when Lakshmi and Narayan are together that there's any assistance involved.
I just wanted to just mention that if you put the pen in the machine, you just get a pen.
Yeah.
Is that connected to the principle of the Gita that as you
surrender, you reciprocate? Yeah, so the whole point is if you don't deal in the right way, it means as you're dealing is how you are dealing. So the man has this idea of what is surrender.
The point is the lady's yelling at you, not someone else. She's yelling at you. That means who she surrendered to. You. You're not providing the thing. She's getting upset. That means dependency, that he's taking it. No, that's independent. So this is the mode of ignorance. Whatever is the reality is taken as opposite. So this is, you're dealing with some very fine points here. But you have to know what it is, because the point is the shyness and elusiveness and contrariness, it won't come out that this is the way it is. Right? So in the Bhagavatam or the Shastra, where you get someplace where the ladies tell it as it is. Right? In the Bhagavatam, you have those three verses by Urvasi, right? And then there's a few verses by Pingala. Right? Other Shastras have it. It's only a few verses. But those, it's understood, those are absolute truth. It's not that it was another conversation. If that ever comes up, take it. But it's rare. Right? 18,000 verses and you have, what, you know, 5, 6, 10 verses?
And Vrindadeva preaches to Sankachubis, he also...
Yeah, same kind of thing. It's that you get those places here and there. But that's just they're being very direct, which is not the nature. But to get the masculine position to function how it should, the feminine will take the masculine position to put it on the right track. Then once it goes on the right track, they go back into the feminine position. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, you know, men are comfortable when they can be men. So women are comfortable when they can be women. The problem is when men are comfortable being men, they're not actually men. Yeah. So that's the problem. Okay. Okay, so in other words, we use the Pancharatric because it develops more with rasa and everything like that, the exchange, so that perspective. We can accommodate the other one for in dealing in the tattva elements, but in application, we'll use the Pancharatric. Okay. Finally, even then, the linga sharir, the subtle body of our experience in which the three modes of nature are active, sattva-gun acting as the mind, rajagun acting as the intellect, and tamagun acting as the false ego. Right? So that's the linga sharir. Right? The karana deha has its form in mahat, the great causal truth beyond vikara, the transformations of consciousness affected by the triguna and kala. So 38. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.17 gives an outline of the levels of material conditioning. In that transcendental state of labdo prashanti, there is no supremacy of devastating time, which controls even the celestial demigods who are empowered to rule over mundane Krishnas, and what to speak of the demigods themselves. Nor is there the mode of material goodness, nor passion or ignorance, nor even the false ego, nor the material causal ocean, nor the material nature. Right? Also in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7.15.54, Narada teaches a similar gradation to Maharaj Yudhishthira. On this path of ascent, the progressive living entity enters the different worlds of fire, the sun, the day, the end of day, the bright fortnight, the full moon, and the passing of the sun in the north, along with the presiding demigods. Right? That's progressive. Other stuff that modern man talks about is not so progressive. When he enters Brahmaloka, he enjoys life for many millions of years, and finally his material designation comes to an end. He then comes to a subtle designation, from which he attains the causal designation, witnessing all previous states. Upon the annihilation of this causal state, he attains his pure state, in which he identifies with the Supersoul. In this way, the living entity becomes transcendental. So he sees that causal state is still not identifying with the Supersoul. Because there, I'm simply the controller and enjoyer.
That's karana.
Yeah, that's the karana.
And linga
sarira. That's when it's when it goes more gross as the subtle body. Does that make sense? So that's why we're getting these things of when you're talking. So for the Karana Sharir, the Linga Sharir is gross. Right? But it's not gross because now it's the desire to control and enjoy in a particular category or area. Does that make sense? Then you have the body that does that. Does that make sense?
Can we say that Linga Sharira is still not manifest? It's in Maha?
No. The Linga Sharira is the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, soul,
seed. The one that carries from one body to another?
Yes. But what makes that happen, why you carry the Linga Sharira from body to body, is because of the Karana Sharira. Because if there isn't a mode of I'm the enjoyer, then why would it go to the next body? So what's the connecting factor? That's why I was bringing it up about you have within subtle, you have the very subtle, the finer, then you have the subtle, then you have the gross. Does that make sense if we use like that? So Hiranyagarbha is the finer. Right? Virat is the subtle. Brahma is the gross. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So is Linga Sharira Siddhi and the ether?
Linga Sharira is within the heart. That's what. Because it's mind, intelligence, and false ego.
Being the most subtle, we have from the gross of the touching energy of the ether?
Means that they're, yes, they accommodate the same space. So the Linga Sharira and your gross body accommodate the same space. Otherwise, if they didn't, that's generally called an out-of-body experience. Yeah, you know, so it's generally good that they're in the same place.
The ahankar, is that synonymous with Karana Dehada?
Ahankar with Karana... No, ahankar is with the Linga Sharira.
Oh.
Means you could say the ahankar on the one is the original weakness of heart, that I'm the controller and enjoyer. The false ego, that's the element where I identify in a particular way.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? I'm from this family, this country, this place, that's that, because it's based on the gross.
Right?
So this is here because it manifests as the gross. The Karana Sharira, it's manifest as the Linga Sharira. Right? And then the Linga Sharira manifests the gross. See, always having these. See, if we have enough means, we're used to just gross. And then adding in the subtle, it's like, oh, hey, wait a minute here. Now you're adding into finer than that.
Yes.
Yes.
Can we say that when we leave the body, both
Linga
Sharira
and Karana
Sharira go to the next one?
Yes.
When we get liberation, Brahma Jyoti, we only get Karana Sharira.
We only have the
Karana Sharira.
There's no Karana Sharira. Because then it's the opposite, because now you identify as I'm servant of Krishna. Then, therefore, now you have the spiritual subtle body and the spiritual, you know, gross body. Does that make sense? So, what does that leave in between? So, Brahman is not actually neutral.
It's
still here. So, you have that moment of being in between the material and the spiritual. And then when you look, what do you see? Something to enjoy or something to serve Krishna with? So that neutral position is that position from which to choose one or the other. If you choose the one, then you move, then you're within the spiritual world, get the spiritual association, develop love for Krishna, and then you'll be placed in the triquadrantal, right? But if you look at it's for me to enjoy, then you will then appear within the world here. It means, in other words, you remain in the echo. It means the unit quadrantal, right? But now you're not within the spiritual energy or yoga maya. You're in the mahamaya. So that's the whole point. Is that you're dealing with the
the viraj. So it's a matter of, are you seeing this side, the spiritual side, or are you seeing that side, the material? It's just, it's your vision. So you're looking at the same thing, but you're seeing something different. It means Shankachuda and the few gopis, he's caught up. He's dealing with material energy. Right? And Balaram, they're his internal potency. But Shankachuda, he's dealing with mind. You're like Ravana. Ram's dealing with internal potency as Sita. Ravana's dealing with what Mahamaya is Sita. So that's the thing. It looks the same, but you're actually dealing with the other side.
All right, so Karma Sharia, we call it also polluted consciousness?
You could say it's the polluted consciousness that is the reason that it's that's there. But in other words, it's the form of wanting to be the enjoyer. So because of that, that's where then these subtle elements of are there on how you want to enjoy. But you don't have the manifestation of the subtle body, the gross body, to apply it through. So then when you come out of the Lord again for the next creation, then all that is manifest. So that's the point. Unless you get rid of the Karana Sharia, then you stay here. And that's gotten rid of by identifying that I'm the servant of the Lord. Right? Where was that? Okay, here, we see. Then he comes to a subtle designation, from which he attains the causal designation, witnessing all previous states. So from there he can see all the variety of states.
Yeah.
You know, because in other words, you can continue on with the one you're in now, or you can choose a different one, you know, by being attracted, or you can... Upon the annihilation of this causal state, he attains a pure state in which he identifies with the Supersoul. Yeah. In this way, the living entity becomes transcendental. So you only get rid of the causal state by identifying with the Lord. Srila Prabhupada translates pragya as the causal designation. It is higher than taijasa, the subtle designation. Right? Because taijasa is the identity based on ignorance. Right? Then you have, what was it? Tajasa and Vaikarika and
Tamas.
Okay, so this is the passion one, Tajasa. You know, the intelligence. So it's just a matter of these elements of their subtle and their identities, their false ego. But it's false ego in the capacity of identifying with the body. False ego identifying with the activities and the senses, and false ego identifying with the mood and the mind and the desire. So that's the Linga Sharia. Because what you have in the form of what kind of, you know, the quality of how the mind, intelligence, and false ego work, therefore the gross, then that changes every lifetime. But the subtle principle of it, that false identity is the control of the world, that remains. So subtler than that is the principle of that, the pragya, is that causal designation, is that false ego is before that. That's the polluted consciousness. Right? Then it has a specific, how you want to apply that polluted consciousness. You know, it's just like, listen, which is first? The thing you want to eat or being hungry? Right? You get hungry. Wow, I'm hungry. And then you start to, so that means I want to eat. Okay. So then you start thinking about what you want to eat. So in other words, I want to be the controller and enjoyer first. Then there's what you want to control and enjoy. So to do that, it's a subtle form of it. Then there is the gross form of it. Right? Because unless you can think about it, unless you can identify with it, unless you can, the senses are interacting with it, how do you enjoy it? Right? Then there's the gross.
That's why many advertisement. They just put it. This is a place which is so enjoyable. It just throw you that, they connect to that idea. That you enjoy this. And
yeah.
Then no, that specific element is in the scene.
Yeah. No. But it's always yes. There's always the point of enjoyment, because then it doesn't matter. So advertisement, if they present something that you can enjoy, either sensually or ideally, then, you know, in other words, you identify with an ideal, and if that ideal is there, then I will enjoy that. Or just the direct sense gratification. So advertisement basically means that. You just have, then they have various techniques on how to present that, but that's all they're trying to do. Sell you on equality, or on an opportunity for sense gratification. Because the quality means then I'll be happy, I'll enjoy. It's just a more subtle. Yeah.
So this progression that Prabhupada mentions, the neutral stage is when the material designations come to an end?
Yes, but they come to an end by remembering the Lord. You don't remember the Lord, it's not complete, so you stay on this side. But as soon as you remember the Lord, then you go on that side. So you can see that neutral position is very, it's basically a transition between one and the other. So that's the point. You have to choose one or the other. We, being small, have to be under internal or external potency. So we're in the position, we come from internal potency, we're in the position of internal potency. But if we don't take it, then we're placed under externals. You know, does that make sense? It's just like, means the person's in the foster system. So you can be in the office where there's the officers of the whole system. But then from there, then you can be placed in a specific family. Does that make sense? So we're expanding from internal potency, so that's the natural position to work from. But that position is on the edge, that it's close enough where we can see the external if we want. By being Bahir Mukh, we'll see external. If we're Antar Mukh, then we'll see internal. So if we choose the internal, then we'll move that direction. Right? We won't come here. If we choose the other, then we'll come here. Is that
in the beginning of the class, we mentioned that the whole thing happened in Sankarshan because he's the reservoir of all jivas and he's the situation.
Yes. But he's expanding his Prajumna Naniruddha. So those elements are there, and so then you have. Because the Lord, Vasudeva, has all those aspects. But to affect the environment, then you have all three.
But he's not involved as Vasudeva.
No, but he's not involved with Vasudeva. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, the man is having a party, and all these arrangements are being done. Why are they happening? Yes, but at the same time, is he out there, you know, in the little outfit and lifting the top off the pot and, you know, no. So that's the whole thing, is he's separate, he can have his whole pastimes, though the whole arrangement is there. So therefore, that main control of that is Sankarshan and Balaram. And then you have Prajumna and Aniruddha, those aspects also. Because then that means you have a situation, then you have the dynamic of the masculine and feminine principle of the desire and the need. And so when you have a situation, you have the desire and need, then what's the next point? Then you do. So that's when Vasudeva steps in. It's all ready. You know. But it's him, but at the same time it's not him. That's the subtlety that Krishna is bringing up. He's doing all this, but it's still not him. Him as a person would rather just be, you know, playing his flute and interacting with the residents of Raja. But because we have different ideas about that, therefore there's the rest of it. Yeah.
Things are manifesting subtle to gross.
thinking, feeling, willing.
I'm just curious. I've heard at different times the mind is situated in the heart. This appears to be the computer, the head.
Yeah, it's just what it uses. That's why you might have nothing up there, but the mind still works.
So the mind is in the causal body? Is it situated in the heart?
Yeah, no, it's everything's in the heart. It's just like the soul doesn't have to be in the hand to, you know, pick up the samosa. So all the subtle body doesn't have to be in the head for it to use the head. That's just where the mechanical things work, because you have to get from the thought to the senses. Right? The sense is going to do the work. Right? So that means the sense is going to be active because the earth, you know, the earth is there, right? The sense is there, but it has earth to work with. Because earth will contact earth. Right? But for the earth to move, then there must be fire, the nerves. Right? There's no fire without air. So that's then the life airs. Right? And then the life airs are pushed on by the mind. In a sense. So that's what it is. You want it, and then all this happens. So without all that stuff, so all it is the brain deals with the fire part of it. But before that, there's the air, and then the mind itself.
Right, the muscles also work on air, right? Contraction.
Yeah, they're also air, but it's just because you also have the element of the... it's air because the air, that particular air moves, and so therefore it moves that... it uses that fire to make it work.
The nerve would be the fire, and then...
yeah, the air. So that's the thing is modern has only got the gross and up to the fire, but they don't understand these other ones before it. You know, they can get symptoms of it, but they don't really understand what's working. That's right, they want to speculate. Just take the Vedic stuff and try to apply that. Then they'll have plenty to work with, and then it'll make more sense.
Are there Vedic references for the mind to be in the heart?
Yeah, I mean, it always says it's in the heart.
I'm sorry?
It always says it's in the heart, whenever it comes across, because the subtle body's in the heart. Well, I think it's in that purport, or that section where Daksha ends up with a goat head, and Prabhupada talks about that, because he still thinks of who he is. Otherwise, if we were in the head, you put a goat's head, then he would be bleating, but he's not. You know, goes on with himself.
Ganesh ended up with a different man too.
Yeah. And in that case, then, no one can complain about the goatee, right? So, like that. Yeah, we never saw a clean-shaven goat, right?
No, we're not complaining.
Yeah. I'm not sure he didn't take another birth after that.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He did. Then he said he didn't have a goat head.
To make sure.
Yeah. Cause, in other words, I guess his wife didn't like the goatee, right? The cuteness of the horns kind of gets old after a while.
Yeah. It's interesting at first, but...
Yeah.
When you look at some of the Muslims, they're starting to look like goats, you know? Because they're eating goats, you know? And they may be headed for
that's
that.
There.
So when people, according to their activities, they develop their body according to their activities, isn't it? I mean, sometimes you can actually see in someone's physiognomy that their next... what it looks like they're going to be.
The principle of goat is it's not a matter of eating goats, it's that goats eat anything. They go out to a garbage pile. I mean, they make crows look like small
dinosaurs.
Amateurs. Those guys, you know, they do really good out there. You know, I mean, they'll eat the wrapper off the can. They'll eat the glue on the back of the wrapper.
You know, they're good. So that's the principle that you're seeing. Okay. And this was part of 38, which was, okay, the jivas in that unmanifest condition of mahat are part and parcel of the universal form displayed within the Lord's own dream. Persons highly accomplished in the mysticism of Astanga Yoga, who know to separate the causal identity from the subtle and gross coverings, can, while in deep trance, visualize the virat dreamed by Sri Vishnu within the sky of his heart. And then, so you're dealing with a lot more kind of subtle stuff here.
So, that's the universal form?
Yes, the universal form. In other words, the dream is the universal form. So you can see that, and you can see how it functions and everything. But you have to be able to separate the two to see it. You know, as the Lord's dream. Otherwise, then you just see your own variety of engagements. Brahma arranged the necessary ingredients and paraphernalia for offering sacrifice from the Lord's own body. 39. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, this refers to the Purushukta lines, Yat Purushena Habisha Deva Yagyama Tanvata. The devatas performed sacrifice using the Lord as the oblations. And Yagyena Yagyama Yajanta. They performed sacrifice using the Lord. Srila Prabhupada elaborates in this purport to verse 23. This is a very subtle element. It's not... Brahma, after his appearance in the gigantic hollow of the universe, saw darkness and nothing else. He felt perplexity, and from his heart he was inspired by the Lord to undergo austerity, thereby acquiring the ingredients for sacrificial performances. But there was nothing besides the two of them, namely the personality of Mahavishnu and Brahma himself, born of the bodily part of the Lord. Thus, Brahma created even the sacrificial ingredients out of the bodily limbs of the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Which means that the cosmic order was created by Brahma himself. Also, nothing is created out of nothing, but everything is created from the person of the Lord. The Lord says, in the, you know, because here, you can't get something out of nothing. So if there is only Brahman, how do you get, with no variety, how would you get variety from it? Or if there's only the void, how do you get non-void from it? Right? It's not possible. So something has to come from something.
For the cosmic soup, for the scientist.
Even the cosmic soup, it's just like this. Let us say the machine is running. Why is it running? Because it's connected to the generator, right? Where the production of power is coming from. You disconnect it, it stops running. So why does energy only transform? Why does it never end? Why does it never diminish? Because it's always connected to a source. Where's that source? That's the point they want to avoid, right? Because they're only interested in playing with the energy. They're not interested in this energy belongs to someone else. Then that means I have to follow their rules. Well, if it's only just free energy, then I can do with it as I like. That's the whole. So that's why they tend to avoid. Those who are more religious acknowledge it, but they don't have methods to deal with it in the scientific community.
It seems very much like the deist, in a sense.
Deist. No, but they're deist. You accept the position of the supreme, but you separate him from what's going on here because I want to control it. It does have that element, of course. Yeah, okay. Okay, meaning that they do accept the Lord, but then they still take the position that they deify because I'm the one controlling it. That's what you
mean. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, okay. Yes. That's true. That's it. Okay. But everything is created from the person of the Lord. And so even the Brahman, from which is the soil to get the material world, is still created from the Lord. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 10:8, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam paravartate. Everything is made from my bodily limbs, and I am therefore the original source of all creations.
Gradually, by invoking the demigods' names, he attained Vishnu, the ultimate goal. Brahma informs Narada. Brahma informs Narada that the same sacrifice was later performed by 9 older brothers of Naraji, who are exalted amongst demigods and sages. Thereafter, the sacrifice was performed by the Manus, the forefathers, the learned scholars, etc. In return, the Supreme Lord accepts the 3 modes of nature so that the gross creation is nicely sustained until the night of Brahma falls. Yet, even as he supports the gross creation with his all-pervasive impersonal energies, right? So that's the, you know, in other words, you have the generator. How is the generator supporting all electrical appliances?
Through the wires.
Through the electricity. So that's the impersonal. So the material creation is maintained through Brahman.
Yes.
The Brahman is resting on him. Yes. So that's the point. Yes. That you'd have to check.
Interesting translation.
So that's the importance of the purports. Because then you get all these different aspects that we don't necessarily know. Because, see, and the difficulty comes as devotees approach this, like especially a section like this. But you're explaining it in classical Sanskrit, but what you're actually discussing is Vedic Sanskrit. So unless you know Vedic Sanskrit, this will mean nothing to you. The connections won't be made. Prabhupada knows Vedic Sanskrit because he translated Ishopanishad. Because you have to know the Vedic Sanskrit to be able to deal with that. Because where the marking, where the note is, defines the meaning. It's not just the syllable. That's classical. It's the note with it that defines what it means. So Prabhupada can translate that. So that means he knows beyond what our scholars are dealing with. So far we haven't, except for Banu Maharaj, no one's taken any interest really in the Vedic Sanskrit element. So therefore I haven't seen anybody be able to work with this.
No, you mean a musical note?
Yes. Every syllable has a musical note. That's the swara. That's what differentiates the Vedic from the classical. The classical, you can use any note you want because you're just dealing with the syllable. But in the Vedic, the syllable has a note, and that note defines its meaning.
Also, Lord Chaitanya's 61 interpretations of 11 Sanskrit words gives you the complexity.
Of course. It means even in classical, you can take it way beyond. Because, but here, Prabhupada, like he quotes Yaska. You know, you don't hear other devotees using Yaska. Because it's a Vedic dictionary. It's a Vedic grammatical dictionary. It's very small. It's like 100 pages. But every word that there is in Sanskrit, you can generate from that. So it's based on how to generate the words. It's not like the English dictionaries where it's just all the variety of usages. It's actually just the words and how to generate. Because you only have to deal with 2,000 roots and then how they generate and everything else. You don't need that big of a book.
And also what separates Prabhupada from other so-called Sanskrit is he understands the conclusion of the Vedas.
Without that, you're
lost.
Yes. Time's up. 1, 2. Okay. Okay. So even as he supports the gross creation with his all-pervasive impersonal energies, the Supreme Lord feels no personal affinity for any of the gunas, not even of the mode of goodness. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow with that footnote for you.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Rama
Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki jai, Jai Nitai Gaur.